Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next hour here on KLDB Club 1220. It is a heat wave. It is 16 degrees. This is going to be the hottest it's going to be all weekend, or all week perhaps. Tom, did you make it in? Oh, you're in there? Okay.
Of course I am. I made it in here somehow. I braved all the tundra outside. Well, maybe not so much.
By the way, I love the announcer man voice you did on that polar plunge spot.
Oh, thank you very much.
The announcer man. So January 25th, you're going to jump in the Arctic water again.
I made the mistake last year, and I'm going to repeat it one more time.
Are you regretting it's not this Monday that you could be doing that jump?
No.
Is there a point where they would actually cancel the polar plunge if it is below 10 degrees?
You know, I have no idea, because on New Year's Eve, I think they started doing polar jumps, polar plunges.
Right.
And I believe that night it was around negative 10, negative 15. In the daytime, it was negative 5, negative 6. All I know is there's a hot tub that's planned to be there as soon as we get out of the water. We can walk about 50 feet.
You know, that's all well and good. And by the way,
I might not leave.
I was out there last year and watched you guys do this. I will not be participating. I'll be there cheering. I will not be jumping in.
Don't they have the chicken coop section, something like that?
I think Flashback Twin Cities is on 1 o'clock. I think you guys are jumping at noon.
Oh, shucks.
So I think that this might not be
going to make it work
with my schedule. No, it's 16 degrees. Looking forward to some fantastic 20 below weather this weekend. big news events. The last Vikings game at the Metrodome, and I made a promise that we will not be talking about the last Vikings game at the Metrodome, but even more interesting, let's take a little flashback to the last Vikings game at Met Stadium. I watched a little video clip on Fox 9 News this week, and the Metrodome has been stripped. There are no seats. There is nothing left. Every piece of plastic and every ad has been stripped.
Well, they auctioned off a wall. An entire wall, like a 45-foot chunk of it.
How much did you pay for it?
I think the original bid was like $1, and then it moved on up to, I think, about $600-$700.
Have you been to an auction?
A real one? No.
I've been to several real auctions, and I'm often amazed of things that get auctioned off, and then I wonder, what is someone doing with that?
What are you going to do with a 45 chunk of the wall?
I went to a surplus auction once and saw someone drag home wrestling mats one time, and I thought to myself, what is someone doing with that?
Like with the big circle in the center?
I one time saw someone buy a McDonald's Golden Arch piece, not the M, a piece of the M, and drug it home with them.
Well, everybody does want a piece of history. That's why the Stonehenge is being taken apart. Everybody takes a little chunk of that.
Well, this has been going on for 30 years. Let's go back to 1981. This is the last Vikings home game at Met Stadium. Here's some audio.
Said it will take them several days to do a complete inventory on what was actually damaged, destroyed, or stolen. Nine fans were arrested on minor charges, and surprisingly, there was only one minor injury.
So December 20th, 1981 was the day the Vikings lost their final game at the Met, but it was also a day that several thousand psyched-up fans whittled away at the very heart and soul of Metropolitan Stadium. Tony Vigneri, Channel 5, Eyewitness News.
We never expected that the security force could cope with that kind of an attack. What we wanted to do was protect people and protect lives if we could. This was no different than a rock concert or some other major event, and our interest was not protecting property.
Were you somewhat disappointed with the actions of the fans?
Both disappointed and embarrassed. I think this whole region ought to be embarrassed, because I assume that went out over national television. And something like the beaning of the official with a whiskey bottle a few years ago, this brings, I think, some shame and embarrassment upon the whole area.
I don't know. There might have been a little bit of spirit drinking that day.
Oh, not a chance. I know I have a friend who actually ended up getting some movie theater chairs, relatively similar to the chairs that they would have over at the stadium. They make wonderful, you know, they're wonderful for your table.
Did he get it through the course of
looting?
At the last showing of Titanic at the movie theater? Or
no, he did not.
This is more audio I want to play. We'll actually play this next week with Tom Ryder, but this is from Channel 11 on the day after the Vikings lost their final game. And this might give a little bit of a idea of what kind of the fans were going through.
At the end of the game, as I decided the field was the place to be, fully knowing the fans would storm the field. This should give you an idea of how hectic it became.
The final football game, the final kind of game anywhere.
Minnesota!
Ever played.
Beautiful.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
It's a shame they couldn't have won, but it really just didn't work out today. They lost to Kansas City. Got some help here today. The goalposts are gone. The fans are on the field. We had a chance while the game was going on, though, to talk with some people, some who've been here from the very beginning in 1961 with the Vikings, and some who've had a lot to do. So let's go and hear what some of them have to say.
And I think we get the picture of what was going on there. This video
I love that lady.
Is on tcmedianow.com if you want to check out the December 21st, 1981 edition of WTCN Channel 11 Care News.
Sounds like a happier version of Disco Demolition Night.
You know, looking at the pictures here, and we're looking at the video, Tim Blatz, my guest today, who I'm going to introduce to you in just a moment, we're looking at the video here. It does look like The Who just walked off stage with Rolling Stones, and the rowdy teenagers just got done.
Less whiskey bottles to the head, though, and they'd be fine.
You know, and I brought this up before. We watched the Twins 87 World Series celebration, and there was nothing damaged too greatly. I mean, there was some ticker tape laying around.
But no
some
cars flipped?
No. This NFL stuff, they get a little bit aggressive.
It's an aggressive sport. I mean, baseball, you just sit back, you watch. Football, you want people to hit each other hard.
And you know what?
And that brings a different kind of crowd.
I love that no matter what, if you win or lose, you just the main instinct is get out there and wreck stuff.
Could be worse. It could be soccer.
That's right. Well, that's why luckily soccer hasn't picked up here yet. We've tried it three times. It hasn't worked out yet. Tim Blatz from Channel 9, Fox 9, is my guest today. Live in studio. Tim, welcome to Flashback
Twin
Cities.
It's so much fun to be here. Thanks for inviting me down. Well, we're watching these videos that Tom has put up. And it's laughable because I've lived those scenes.
You're sitting back there clapping.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, the poor reporter from Channel 11, you know, you can't see this at home because it's radio. But, you know, he's got all these drunk fans around him trying to get in the shot and photobombing him. And it's just
He's trying so hard just to take his microphone and report to the camera. And what I always find funny about people that they get – there's a camera there, and they just get really – some people avoid the camera. Others love the camera, and they want to make sure that they are waving and smiling. And there's some – I'm sure you've experienced this
it's happened to me dozens of times. And in fact, watching this reminds me of – you know, once upon a time, I used to work at WTMJ Channel 4, the big NBC station in Milwaukee. And some of your Wisconsin viewers, or listeners rather, are probably familiar with the great and incomparable Mike Couchet, who hosts At Issue, that's seen around the state here. And I worked with Mike for many years, but whenever we wanted to humble Mike, we had this great video clip that we'd always would pull up. And I believe it was from the 82 World Series run with the Milwaukee Brewers. And it was Mike doing a live shot inside of a bar and somebody pouring a beer over the top of his head. And, you know, it's those humbling moments that every television broadcaster has,
has
in their back
video,
pocket.
Right?
Yep,
it reminds
absolutely.
You're human.
And the best part is everyone around them has that copy of the tape because everyone took that deck and made 25 different copies of that. And it floats around. It gets sent around. I mean, now this goes on YouTube and then everyone has it. And maybe it burns and dies quickly. But as I was talking before the show, these tapes, and people never really look at what tapes they give me when I have them. I thought, that's the video they did not want anyone to see. There's
exactly.
That embarrassing moment. Tim, you've been here. We talked about a month ago, and you said, I don't know if I could be on your show. I've only been in the market 10 years. I said, Tim, that's a lifetime now in TV to be in the same market 10 years, same station.
It is. You know, in this day and age, especially it is. But, you know, I also have the privilege and honor of working in a market where you know, we've got a lot of talent here who have been here for just decades, you know, and I'm talking about some of my competitors, the Tom Hausers of the world, you know, the Tom Lydens of the world at Fox 9, Boyd Hubert, who's been over Care 11 for you know, just a generation now, good friend of mine, by the way. And so you've got this stable of talent, and the Mary LaHammers at TPT, who have just spent most of their entire careers here. And for me, being here 10 years, that's just such a blip on the radar screen as compared to some of the people I admire the most.
Well, you know, I think you're being too humble. Because I think that, you know, you've been here 10 years. I think that you've been at Channel 9 for 10 years, and it's a great thing. I mean, we really appreciate having people we can count on. And here in Minnesota, we look at people on TV. Sometimes we see them more than we see our own families, especially when we have a schedule of getting up, going to work, coming home and watching our local news. And we are a big news town here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've worked in other Wisconsin markets in New Mexico, and I'm sure you've probably noticed that we take a little bit of a different approach to our news here. We take it very seriously. We are not pandered to here. And a lot of the things that have caught on bigger markets, it's been slower to catch on here because
thank God.
You know, and when I travel to LA or Chicago and I see things on the news and look at a half-hour broadcast, like, wow, this is really – you don't see this kind of stuff in Minneapolis. You don't see a car chase for 20 minutes.
No, because our market is a little different. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the old joke about living in northern Wisconsin and in Minnesota about, you know, the cold weather that we're about to experience, how it keeps the riffraff out. And there's a certain grain of truth to that. And, you know, so we don't have the news events and things that you see in other markets across mm-hmm. the country. But also, you know, there's a certain level of sophistication here, too, among the people, among our viewers, among your listeners. I mean, stop and think about it for a moment. This is a market where we read more books per capita than any other place in the country. Cable penetration here is still relatively low, which is why when mm-hmm. the broadcast stations went over to digital, the FCC considered this a target market because we had so many people who are still watching over the air mm-hmm. and not through their cable or satellite TVs. So we've got a highly educated audience. We have a highly readable audience. They read a lot of books, read a lot of magazines, and we are second only to Boston in a number of colleges and universities per capita.
That's correct.
So you're talking about a highly educated audience, high skill level audience, who takes their news seriously, who takes their lives seriously. And so that provides and creates a different kind of environment. You know, if you get something wrong on the broadcast, man, they let you know about it in no uncertain terms.
Absolutely. I've made a couple of mistakes on our social media just here and there, and I get that information right away.
Yep.
I post these videos to tcmedianow.com, and a couple times I've gotten a date wrong. And, I get an email within hours. And you know what? No matter what I put online, and maybe you probably can know this from Facebook or from the blog, you put me online, there's someone, I don't know where they are, who's always reading it a second after you hit that submit button. And the next person then has a correction or a comment or a clarification of what you wrote, what you meant, or what the real story is. Our guest today is Tim Blatz. Let's take a break, Tom. We'll come back, and I want to talk a little about a story you told me about the 18 years it took you to come here. And
how the industry has changed just a little bit.
And how the industry has changed. Yeah. We'll be right back on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest Tim Blatz of Fox 9. Tim, thanks again for being here today.
Oh, this is a ton of fun. Thanks.
You were telling me, so you worked in Wisconsin markets for a while before, and then also New Mexico before coming to Fox 9. You spent 18 years trying to come to Minnesota, and you finally got a spot here.
Yeah, and it was truly one of the best phone calls I've had in a long time. I was working in state government at the time in New Mexico, and I was in Governor Richardson's office when my phone rang, my cell phone rang, and it's this voice at the other end. It's Tim, this is Ted Canova calling from Fox 9 in Minneapolis. I have this position up here. I think you'd be ideal for it. And I said, Mr. Canova, God bless you, but I'm kind of on another path right now, mm-hmm. and enjoying life in New Mexico, and he just kept coming back and coming back and coming back.
It's a nice problem.
Yeah, so I'm still forever indebted to Ted, who's now the news director at WGBH in Boston, mm-hmm. for bringing me and my family here, because this has always been a destination market for me. And, you know, you and I were talking a little bit earlier about how the industry has changed a little bit. And, you know, we were talking about some of the people with such incredible longevity in this market. You know, the Trish Van Pilsons of the world, who I work with at Fox 9, Jeff Ballion, who I work with at Fox 9, who have just been here for 25, 30 years. And, you know, you have to understand that the Minneapolis television market to this day is still considered one of the top creatively premier markets in the country. Minneapolis, Seattle, Nashville, Tennessee, Denver. It's where, you know, good journalism and good television happens on a regular basis. It doesn't just happen by accident. And, you know, if you went to a New York or a Los Angeles and you watched the evening news, you'd laugh at it.
And I have.
And, I mean, it's just a different kind of product. And you know, so there's a kind of a sense of quality in these markets. So you get a lot of people that this is where you want to work.
Well, and can you help me out, actually, as somebody who doesn't see New York news often? Can you describe what exactly do you mean by I would laugh at it?
Well, number one, they haven't invented the tripod there yet. So all of the video, to coin an old David Letterman sketch, looks like live monkey cam. And, you know, it's, a lot of the stories are shot off the shoulder. You know, they haven't invented wireless microphones yet. So you see a stick mic in every shot. And it's all about the reporter and not the story. And it's just a different kind of news product.
It's that action news formula that they've not shaken off yet.
Exactly.
And if you watch, this is going to be, you watch Anchorman and Anchorman 2, okay? Mm-hmm. And maybe you might disagree with me, but I was watching Anchorman 2. I'm almost a little bit ashamed to admit that I actually watched it and enjoyed it. But I did watch it, and they go to New York, and all the things that we're talking about now, you know, with live action, it's breaking news, it's now, and that's what LA and New York are. And there, I think, and tell me if I'm not seeing what you're saying here, that it's so formulaic. There's not that you or the producer or the anchors, they're not actually creating content. They're taking content by a formula which they are instructed to present it.
And it's not that, you know, we're all of that in this market. Right. You know, certainly, you know, we've got lots of things that all of the stations there are trying to improve and trying to get better at. But, you know, it took me a long time to be able to earn the right and the privilege, the high privilege, to be able to work in the Minneapolis-St. Paul television market. It took me 18 years to get here. And that's after sending, you know, for years, resume tape after resume tape after resume tape and doing a couple of auditions here in the market. No, I wasn't good enough. And when I finally had a chance to work here, I joked that somewhere here in town there was a landfill manager that's trying to hunt me down to charge me some tipping fees for all of the resume tapes that I have in his landfill. But just to kind of illustrate how the business has changed a little bit now, it took me 18 years here, and we now have individuals doing it in as little as 18 months. And it's, you know, it's just kind of where the state of the industry is right now, where because of the economics mm-hmm. and everything else and tighter budgets and so it's
moving faster. And I think
yes,
that
that's a very good term. It's just moving faster.
And also, media companies now are owning more stations, so you can be transferred from station to station much quicker now versus doing the audition process. So if you're Fox, okay, mm-hmm. or you're CBS, and you own multiple dozens of stations, and you see someone here in Albuquerque you think is going to work out in Minneapolis, well, it's one phone call and it's HR paperwork versus the actual formal audition tape.
Exactly. And that happens more at the senior management level than it does kind of down in the trenches with the rest of us. And a great example is my former boss, Bill Dahlman, who is our vice president of news at KMSP Channel 9 and quite good at what he did with us. And we enjoyed working with him. And then this summer, Fox plucked him up and said, Bill, you've done a great job, but you've got the exact skill set we need for the brand new Fox Sports 1 network. And so now he's the news director in charge of Fox Sports 1 in L.A. and putting on their nighttime news program there to compete head on head with SportsCenter. So we're quite proud of what Bill has done. And I think, you know, Fox got a great guy to move to Los Angeles, too.
Our guest today, Tim Blatz. Tim, you were a journalist, anchor reporter in Milwaukee and Green Bay. And then you decided to take a different career path and go to Albuquerque. What made you go from traditional journalism to political communication?
Well, that's a great question. I moved to New Mexico to take another opportunity in television back in 2000. And at the end of 3 years there in television, I walked up to my general manager and I said, this has been a great gig. I've loved every second of it, but I want to try something else. And I had partnered up with another producer there in town, and we started making documentaries. So I started my own company doing, you know, media production work and documentary production work. And it wasn't more than a couple of months into that than an old contact of mine, who is now the lieutenant governor, said, Tim, I need some help up here at the Capitol. Would you come on as my communications guy? And one thing led to another, and boom, I was, you know, working at Santa Fe every day. And it was nothing that I ever sought out to do. It kind of sought me out. And it was a great decision because, you know, think about it from the standpoint of a journalist. where you're always kind of on the outside looking in at government and reporting on government. This was my chance to now be an insider and to be a player on the inside of government. And I enjoyed every second of it. It was just fascinating. It was fun. I learned a ton. And it was a very activist administration. So Governor Richardson had just come in and given some broad authorities to the Lieutenant Governor, Diane Dennis, who I was working with. And, constitutionally, it's just set up so differently than it is here in Minnesota, because there, the Lieutenant Governor is not only the chief ombudsman for the state, that person also serves as president of the Senate. Mm-hmm. So they're physically running the operations of the Senate when it's in session. And she had created, with the governor's blessings, a children's cabinet. And so what the children's cabinet's task was to look at all of its touch points where state government touches families and especially children. And this is very, very important in a state that has the highest poverty level in the nation. You know, New Mexico kind of battles it out back and forth with the state of Mississippi for the highest poverty levels. So we had some real issues there. And one of the main policy agenda items that they wanted to pass was an early childhood education program, much like we have just done now here in the state of Minnesota. And there it's critical because of the high poverty rate, but we went into it with a very long-term kind of view and looking at performance measures and looking at it from the standpoint is, let's just not throw money at the problem. Let's create a policy initiative where we can actually force change. So we looked at certain performance measures over time, such as, and this is going to, not only just reading rates, but school attendance, not learning rates, but other things such as dropout rates. Mm-hmm. Incarceration rates, and not just with the school children themselves years down the road, where we can create some benchmarks as to how many of them are going into jail or prison or whatever, but their parents too, because we were going to try and make this a holistic kind of approach to early childhood education. So learned a lot. It was a fabulous experience.
And you follow politics and government before this opportunity, and I can tell because a passion for what's going on. So when you're in the inside of it, you're finally figuring out, okay, this is really how these things get done. This is how you need to sell this initiative, this product. This is who you need to talk to. This is who the blessing you need to get to. That had to been a really give you a great depth when you went back into traditional journalism to really know
this is
how doors get knocked in the Capitol, and this is what happens.
Yeah. I think one of the chief takeaways for me was the importance of electing people, and please don't read too much into this, folks, but truly the importance of having a political gamesman in chief executive roles. And I'm going to single out Bill Richardson, who was a politician's politician. And Governor Richardson got stuff done because he knew how the political game was mm-hmm. played. And yes, I think there is a value to having citizen politicians. There's an extreme value to having a fresh look, like a Michael Bloomberg, who came out of the business world and went in New York and really kind of turned it upside down and made it his own. There's a value in that, but there's also a value in having quote-unquote professional politicians come in, because they know how to build the political coalitions, they know how to bust down doors, they know how to bust through the red tape and get things done.
I have a theory that Jesse, and don't read too much into this, that Jesse Ventura could have been governor forever, and here's why. Jesse Ventura was elected as a citizen governor. He mm-hmm. Yes, he was on the radio, and he had been in some B-list entertainment, and he was a local person. And his issue was taxes and the surplus, yeah. And that was his whole issue. He was that angry man going to Washington, and he was elected. But the one thing that Jesse never figured out was you got to get you and you and you to figure out a way to get a deal done.
Yes.
And when that didn't happen his way, art of negotiation or the art of political savviness never happened. And that's why I think at a certain point when things were really great in the state and we were making a lot of money, he could have ran forever and probably would have won if he would have used his media charisma, which he did have some at that point, before a couple little media
Mm-hmm. I think one of the hits on former Governor Ventura is that he had an approach of my way or the highway. And, you know, a lot of times in politics that doesn't work because you have to build the coalitions in order to get the votes in order to pass policy. Now, one thing that so many observers give Governor Ventura extreme credit for was hiring a fabulous cabinet. He surrounded himself with really good thinkers. You know, the Peter Hutchinsons of the world, the L. Tinklenbergs, who ran the Department of Transportation at the time, and really put in place some really good people to run the individual agencies in state government. And I think that's where it could be argued that he really succeeded.
Ted Mondale. And also, you got to give David Ruth and John Woodley credit for being able to damage control the things that were said from the press day in and day out. And, you know, David Ruth was his producer at KSDP and KFAN. And then he became a his political director. And then I think David Ruth, I mean, that was a career path for him. I think he was communication director of the U of M at one point, or in communications. And Woodley, he did pretty well after that was said and done, too.
Yeah, but one of my observations is, and I think we see this in Congress right now, there's just an extreme lack of people who are skilled at the art of the deal. You know, they just can't get the deal done anymore. And in some respects, a lot of that is the product of the certain rules that now Congress has imposed. I mean, no more pork and no more. I mean, that's how stuff got done back in the day. You know, LBJ would call up a senator and say, you know, do you want that bridge built in your community? Well,
vote on this.
Exactly. And that's how a lot of legislation was passed back in the day.
In Minnesota, as you know, the rule. The lobbyist rules that changed in Minnesota, when the lobbyists went away from the Capitol and the legislature had to get along.
They've never gone away from the Capitol.
Well, the lobbyist gifts went away. So the whining, dining, and allegedly went away. That's when people stopped socializing and getting along with each other, and people became very isolated. And that's why every year we look at the state government and think, how can it get worse? No one gets along, we're divided, and then a couple years here and there we have a very one-sided government, so we get a few things done, and then everyone gets mad and they push them back, and then we get another divided government. You know, what is the solution? And now everyone can also tweet all their ideas that come to their mind, and political careers can be shot down within minutes of a bad tweet or a poor moment that someone captures on their phone and puts on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And before I get off to another path here, I want to ask you a question. What made Ted Canova, how did he convince you to come back to Minnesota? You're working in this really exciting field in political communication. How did he convince you to come back to Minneapolis in January to come back and anchor the news?
Well, you know, we were just talking about the art of the deal. He had originally proposed me to come up and be the weekend anchor in the traditional Saturday night, Sunday night kind of role. And I said, Ted, no. I mean, Ted, I love you, man. Thank you so much, but I'm just not doing that. I've paid my dues. I've done that. And so, you know, he came back a week later and says, okay, here's what we've done, Tim. We're going to take Jeff Passolt. We're going to move him Sunday through Thursday. That way you could have Sunday off with your family. I said, done.
And what a great...
When can I start?
And what a great idea. If you're trying to sell your marquee news team, Sunday night is the most watched
TV night. It is absolutely the most watched night of the week. And we see that consistently. Weekend and week out, as you know, people are they kind of tune out a little bit towards the end of the week, and Sunday night is that family night to kind of recharge your batteries and reset yourself for the week that's ahead, and they tune in, and not just us, but you know, all of our competitors too. People are finally back in front of the television set again, and anymore these days they're handheld devices.
That's right.
Because television viewing these days is anymore it's a multi-screen event, and so they're setting their mind for the rest of the week.
10 years ago this month, you came here to Channel 9 to do the weekend news. And did you think in 2004 that you were going to be as connected with your audience as you are today? And this is not. I don't think 10 years ago was that long ago. Through the Facebooks, the Twitters, the this direct communication. I'm sure you got over the course of your career letters, both fan letters, and you were completely wrong on everything you say, and you're the
I never get letters anymore. Never, ever. I've got a mailbox at Channel 9 that sits empty. constantly because the modes of communication are just so much different now. You know, email is still really big, but if somebody wants to get a hold of you, I mean, you're a classic example, Tom. You reached me through Facebook. You sent me a Facebook message. And, you know, I had a viewer yesterday send me a message on Twitter, you know, just kind of sent something out there, kind of being critical about a story that we had aired here on Fox 9. So there are just so many more accessible ways to get a hold of people. You know, Twitter has only been around for roughly about 6 or 7 years now.
I think even mainstream 3 years at best.
And mainstream is the key word there too, because people have only started to accept it now and really use it within the past 3 years. And Twitter is just such a fabulous phenomena too, because people it was just meant to be a microblogging service. What's on your mind? And it has really turned into a news service. I mean, people who are news junkies are on Twitter and they check it many times a day. However, the audience for Twitter is still minute compared to the people who are on Facebook.
And I was one of the people that thought when Facebook and Twitter first, on our guest today, Tim Blotz, talking about his career before and at Channel 9, when I saw Facebook and Twitter, I thought, I'm not getting into that. I'm not doing that. That's for young kids. And then I realized, well, it's very inconvenient for me not to have it because so many people that I want to connect with are on Facebook. And I have to admit, I have talked to people I haven't talked to in 20 years. I talk to people that I never thought I'd talk to, able to connect to the show or through what I do with tcmedianow.com. It's been a great tool, and Twitter's been a great thing too.
You know, social media has just become such a fascinating outlet now. I went back to school here a couple of years ago and completed a master's degree and looked at specifically for my thesis and capstone is to how we can roll social media into our news operation. And so what I did as a part of that is I researched our audience and I did a survey of 1,200 of our viewers at Fox 9, specifically asking them, what do you want from us in social media? And at that time, the vast majority of those people on social media channels were on Facebook. Small, small percentage on Twitter, and I think that's probably changed now a lot. But what did they want from us? They were interested in news updates, behind-the-scenes anecdotes about what it took to get that story today. And I'll share a little story with you on that in a little bit about Rob Olson and how he gets it and my colleague Don Mitchell and how they really get it in social media. But they're looking for those little anecdotes about how hard it was to get that story today. What didn't make it into your story tonight that you saw today that's really kind of an interesting little nugget? And through this research, what I discovered was is that if people saw something posted on social media, 70% of them indicated that they would be willing or would most likely watch our newscast or broadcast that night. Now, that's an incredible insight if you're a broadcaster, because now you can engage your viewer throughout the day or your listener throughout the day and try to direct them and steer them into a broadcast product later on that night. I just ask you to stand back and think about how you use social media and your listeners, too. How many times have you seen something, maybe in the past week, that you saw on Twitter and Facebook and said, I didn't know that. I got to learn something more about that. Because psychologically, what's happening there is that you want to participate in conversations that you're having with your group of friends, whether it's your family members, whether it's your coworkers, whether it's your wife, and so in order to be up to speed with what those people are talking about, you want to search out and also find out what these people know. And so there's a certain psychological ladder that you're trying to climb up there to be participatory. And that's where this social media has really been kind of a blessing for those of us in the news business.
I had always been I'm not a big Twitter person, never really a big fan of it before. But in school, they said you have to learn how to use it. And it really was driven home to me. There was a broadcasters convention here in the Twin Cities last year. And it had some of the heads of the largest media companies and industries here in the Twin Cities. And they said the absolute number one thing you have to learn how to do if you want to succeed in news, Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. But the thing that I would really be curious from you is, tweeting all the time, you're working all the time.
Yes,
you never
are.
Have any time
no.
off. If you're at dinner and you hear something, you got to tweet it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, does that give you any kind of downtime at all, or are you on all the time?
And here's my question. What's your expectation from your management, and has it ever been an implied expectation, or is this kind of how it just kind of assumed expectation of what your participation in social media is?
We are now required to participate, and because of that audience connection that is out there, and for some people, it's just a natural extension of their personalities. And this is where I bring up my colleague, Dawn Mitchell. She's got more followers than any other person at Fox 9. And yes, some of that, quite frankly, probably has to do with the fact that she's in a very attractive woman. And so she gets a lot of followers that way because she's doing sports. And so she's kind of got that niche. But dang, she's just good at it.
Oh, she's
good at it.
She's a great lady. I've met her through some mutual friends. She's a great,
yeah.
great person, and she really fun. And you know, the what's better about Dawn is the way she presents herself on social media is the way she is in real life. Too.
Yes, she is.
It's,
and you have to be authentic. You can't hide behind anything, and that's where Dawn is so good on social media, because you know, she, if you follow Dawn on either Twitter or Instagram, she's really big on Instagram. She loves Instagram. You know, Dawn doesn't have a partner in life, but her partner is her dog Wilson. So she is always tweeting and posting a picture of something, some new adventure that she and Wilson are on. And her viewers and her followers love that. And again, it's those little nuggets. It comes back to, you know, what you know as a broadcaster, Tom. People want to be your friends. And that's what it's all about in the end.
Me and Tom get tons of requests every week on our Facebook sites to be our friends. Let's take a quick break. Tim Blatt's our guest today. I want to talk more about this. There's this NFL game going on this weekend, I think, that we might be broadcasting.
Seriously?
I know. I've heard a little bit about this. Fly Fit Twin Cities. We'll take a break on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest, Tim Blatz of Fox 9. And Tim, you are a Minnesotan now, correct? You consider yourself a Minnesotan.
I'm now a Minnesotan, and in fact, my grad school loans say I'm a Minnesotan. I proudly wear my University of Minnesota sweatshirt, and I'm surprised I don't have it on today.
However, you still have an allegiance to a team across the border here, which actually KLBB is the home of the Green Bay Packers.
I'm a very loyal Packer fan.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I grew up watching it, and I still remember the day that the Packers won Super Bowl I, and Dad calling us, you know, we were out playing someplace, and Dad calling us in the living room and says, "Guys, come on, you got to see this. They're tearing down the goalposts." And, you know, so I lived on and off in Green Bay for 8 years. Both of my daughters were born in the shadows of Lambeau Field, and they're on the season ticket waiting list. And you know, I covered the Packers, obviously, when I was there, and I got to know the great Reggie White very, very well, and he invited me to be in his movie called The Reggie's Prayer, and we went out to Portland, Oregon, and shot that. So, yeah, there's some deep, deep roots with my family and my wife's family in the Green Bay Packers. My father-in-law knew many of the players from the glory years. In fact, he and Ron Kostelnik were business partners. Ron Kostelnik was one of the great Packers from the 1960s. And you have to understand, again, that was just a whole different era. I mean, none of those guys made the money
No.
that they're making today. And when the football season was over, they had to get jobs. And
yeah, pro sports was a halftime.
It was a halftime profession. Mm-hmm. It absolutely was.
And think of the injuries it sustained. I mean, the injuries it sustained, and this is coming out into full disclosure in the news now that these guys made no money. They worked half the year, and they need some to be taken care of by this league that made tons of money off.
Yeah,
them.
I mean, look at so many the Vikings from that era too. You know, look what they made of themselves. I mean, they weren't just athletes. They were thinkers and doers. And I'm thinking of the Alan Pages. You know, I mean, good Lord. You know, Supreme Court Justice Alan Page, for crying out loud. You know, the Bart Starrs, who went on to have car dealerships, and the Ken Bowmans, who went on to become just great attorneys in northeastern Wisconsin. And
Fran Turkington had about four different companies, I think, since he's written to the online finance thing has been his passion,
you know,
I think, since leaving.
You look at those players from that era of football and what they've accomplished. It's just amazing. And how they, you know, once the football career was over, they built just monstrous business careers.
You know, on Christmas we were talking about the family. One thing, and not to call anyone, it's been a rough week for Vikings fans. Some few off-season things have kind of come out into the open, but you didn't really hear a lot about, and this it may have gone on, we didn't hear about it, but extracurricular activities with the law, not a lot of that went on, you know, even 25, 30 years ago. And it went on, I'm sure.
It went on. It just didn't get, you know, the I'm trying to think what player it was in green. The name of the player. I mean, Max McGee. I mean, a lot of them were, you know, had a lot of extracurricular activities. And but it was just a different era in sports.
So those nights when it's the big Vikings-Packers game and you're there with the whole crew, and I know like Jeff Passel is a huge Vikings fan, mm-hmm. and others. Now, are you guys able to have a friendly banter back and forth? Or
absolutely. What's really funny, and I you know, I really think you can probably do this in any office or organization in the Twin Cities area. You can probably, you know, and please, no disrespect to our Vikings fans in the great Vikings organization, but you can really kind of almost paint a line down the middle of the office and divide the Packer fans from the Vikings fans, and you certainly can in our audience.
I give you guys props for courage, because, you know, you're in the hornet's nest with the Vikings fans. Mm-hmm. With there is probably for every green jersey, you know, there are a few four or five purple jerseys, but they don't back down. They go in there and they take their beatings and they take their mm-hmm. verbal lickings like the best of them.
And don't get me wrong, I love the Vikings. I will cheer for them every weekend that they're not playing the Green Bay Packers. You know, I cover the Vikings, and especially at the legislature where they're getting the stadium, and, you know, I wish them nothing but the best, and we'll cheer for them, except when they're playing Green Bay.
There you go. You know, the book here you brief up with.
We just, you know, we were kind of talking about how this big event coming up tomorrow night, and it's going to be, what, 16 below zero here, and they're predicting...
For a high.
You know, I don't know, few people remember this, but 46 years ago, last week, was the anniversary of the Great Ice Bowl. And the parallels between these two games that are going to happen in Green Bay now are just uncanny. And, you know, if you go back, if you have the time, I encourage you to go down to your independent bookstore here in Stillwater and see if you can find the book. If not, it will be online on Amazon or something like that. But it's a book called When Pride Still Mattered. And it's written by the great David Marinus, who's a Pulitzer Prize winner. And David Marinus worked for a while in Madison, and he's now with the Washington Post. And he wrote the most unbelievable account of the old Ice Bowl that I've ever read. And I brought in the book here today just to read an excerpt from it, just to kind of give your viewers a feeling for how cold that game was, you know, 46 years ago, and what this game is going to be like. And in one of the passages he writes about is Dick Schaap. You know, Dick Schaap, who we all knew from ABC Sports, was one of the quintessential sports writers at the time. And he had come into Green Bay to cover this game between the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys. And here's the passage. Dick Schaap led a foursome of New Yorkers out to Green Bay for the big game, which he hoped would provide a narrative climax for a book he was writing with Jerry Kramer, the eloquent offensive guard. As Schaap and his editor, Bob Gutwig, and their wives were driving down for breakfast, Schaap noticed the temperature read on the side of the bank clock. It was minus 13. He said, "Look, it's broken." He had never seen a negative temperature and assumed that the bank got it wrong. David Robinson was in the kitchen eating his traditional pregame meal, scrambled eggs and a fillet of 20-ounce T-bone steak. His little twin boys hovered in the next room waiting for their dad to leave so that they could eat the rest of the steak. He said, "It's 20 below out there." "20 above, you mean," Robinson said. "It can't be 20 below." You know, so they got the forecast wrong 46 years ago, and everyone's shocked about it. No one's going to be shocked right now. But I'm looking for this other passage here oh, here it is. I got to turn the page. And this was somebody at halftime. trying to tell Lombardi that the mat that he bought for the field was didn't work and the field was frozen. Chuck Lane was heading out of the locker room to check on the field when he met a group of assistants coming the other way. They said, "Tell Lombardi the field is frozen." One of them said, "Tell Lombardi the field is frozen? You can't do that." And, you know, you just hear Lombardi thundering in the background. But as they took the field, one of the other sports writers said, "The Cowboys," said Chuck Meerine, "looked like Earthmen on Mars. Their outfits they wore, most of them had hooded sweatshirts on underneath their helmets. They looked silly as hell. And that kind of scarf thing around their faces with their eyes cut out, they looked like they were monsters from a B-grade movie. No matter how cold the Packers felt, one look across the field made them feel superior."
Well, good luck to our Packers this weekend on this this Ice Bowl. That what's the forecast for Green Bay this weekend? Do we know what the is it? You know, it's going to be 13 below here. Do we know what Green Bay is going to be?
I think it's going to be bone-chilling cold, whatever it is.
You know, we're going to have a very interesting reality check next year. We're playing outdoors at TCF Stadium. You know, our Vikings are known for a generation of being the hardiest team to play in snow and cold. They haven't done that in 30 years, and this is going to be a very, very big wake-up call, not only for Vikings.
Well, except
players
for when the dome collapsed that they had to play at TCF Bank Stadium, and now they're going to be playing there again. You know what? I'm sorry. I just think it's the way football was meant to be played.
I tend to agree with you, and I'm not one that is going to be out there very much, but I guess in the new stadium they do have the glass, you know, the glass ceilings. You can see the snow coming down on you, just not feel it. But I think that's going to be a good way for the Vikings to kind of get a little tougher for 2 years, play out in some cold weather. Looking at the Met Stadium video for the show today, and they show that the glory days of the Vikings when they're actually in Super Bowls, they're playing and there's like inches of snow they're being tackled in, and the field is all white and they're wearing short sleeve shirts. They're not even wearing the hooded sweatshirts. I mean, this was, you know, Bud Grant, I think, prided his team on a team that they didn't need gloves or extra warm padding. They were tough. And I think at one point the Vikings had the worst road record because we couldn't play in cold climates and we're from Minnesota.
No, man. I'm trying to pull up the forecast for Green Bay right now on my smartphone, and here it is. They're looking for a low of minus 19 on Sunday with a high of just 3 degrees.
Fantastic. So, and if you don't want to be out there, you can listen to KLBB Club 1220, the home of the Green Bay Packers.
You know what? I do every Sunday.
And you were telling me you listened on a...
I've got a... my wife gave me this for a couple of years ago. I've got a 1929 Glory Tone tube set radio at home. It's one of the old Tombstone kind of radios. And one of the engineers at work, Bill Hutchinson, all fixed it up for me, put in new tubes. And so, yeah, so every Sunday I've got a little wire that I string upstairs across my window so I can pick up KLBB and the Packers radio network.
So you have fun watching you this morning as you just saw the radios out here. You're like, you have a genuine passion for this history.
You have the whole experience down. I mean, not only you listen to Packers the way it's supposed to be played, you know, supposed to be listened to on this old radio. Quick announcement, February 27th, we are going to have, well, I'm going to have, a evening called Newsapalooza, an evening of history and humor at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights. You can buy tickets on my website at www.tcmedianow.com. More information next few weeks. We're going to have a media panel. We're going to have some clips and some video that we have played throughout the year on Flashback Twin Cities and some new video you may not have seen yet. It'll be a good night. It'll be fun to see some video from sports highlights and lowlights, commercials. I have a big Block E segment. It'll be a fun night. More details to come, but tcmedianow.com for details. Tim, thank you for being on the show today. We had a lot of fun, and we'll have to make this a habit and do this
again.
Please,
I would love to come back. This was so much fun.
Tim can be seen every night. In fact, you're getting ready for work.
I've got my suit on. I'm going in right after this.
5 o'clock on Fox 9 tonight.
You got it.
Every Friday and Saturday, see Tim. And actually, Tim does transportation and capital reporting throughout the week. You can see Tim's work. Also at myfox9.com.
You got it there.
That's right. Next week, Flashback Twin Cities, we'll be back with Tom Ryther. This is Tom Osmond. Till next week, so long.